So hello again, and here we are back with the One Shot Football Podcast. I'm your host, Steve McBain. We had a short hiatus last week with the international break. I think we'd all agree it's been a slightly strange week in sport. A really terrible week with France, suffering the ignominy of losing to England. But in all seriousness, a terrible week off the pitch, and we wish everyone in Paris well. And also the sad passing of Jonah Lomu. We are a football podcast, but there are certain sports stars, I would say, who transcend sports and are just superstars, and he was one of them. But anyway, I'm here with three guests. We have our regular Drew O'Donnell. Drew, how are you?
Very good, very good. Glad to be back.
And how are the mighty Rangers getting on? Hips closing the gap?
Yes. Hips are closing the gap, but that's all right. It's only because they're actually just going to fall away in about a few games. But I mean, I think Hibs are actually doing very well. They've only been beaten once this season. That was by Rangers earlier on, and they've done very well. And it's good for Scottish football. They're in the semi-finals of the League Cup, so it shows you the level at which those both teams are playing compared to the rest.
Absolutely. Okay, Mr. Jeremy Searle, how are you?
Very well, thank you, Steve.
England team full of Spurs. Full of Spurs players. I mean, everyone's been saying the England midfield's been dire for years, and now it actually has him in there.
Very true.
Absolutely. Yes. So anyway, we'll talk about that more. And back for his second appearance of the season, Mr. Parth Ash. Parth, how are you?
I'm very good, guys. Thank you for
having
me.
Excellent. Looking forward to the big game this weekend, City Liverpool.
Absolutely. It's very crucial for all of us.
We'll be talking about that a bit later. So this week we saw the outcomes from the four playoffs. So Ukraine, Hungary, Republic of Ireland, and Sweden have all taken their places. Zlatan Ibrahimovic will have one last big chance on the big stage, I guess, before he goes and wins the Olympic 100 metres. Who are we tipping to win, guys? Jeremy?
I'm tipping Germany to win. I just think they're going to be too strong. I don't think Spain are up to it. France are up to it. England definitely are not. And I think that they're the best team in the competition. I'm backing them.
You don't think that Spain have recovered from their that dreadful World Cup?
No, I don't think so. I don't think enough change to be made with Spain. I'm sticking with Germany, mate.
Okay. Parth?
I would put my money on Spain. I think it's about time they'll get good. Yeah.
Okay. And Drew?
I'm going to go, I agree for once with the illustrious colleague here, Jeremy.
Very much.
I think Germany are the top team. I would like to see, I've got Germany, Spain, Portugal, and Iceland making up the four. The reason Iceland is because they were one of the first to qualify, and I thought with a team that qualifies first is usually going to have a good run. There's always one team, Denmark, Greece, who actually go above and beyond, and I think Iceland will be up there running it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I tend to agree with Parth. I think Spain, the reason I don't like the Germans so much this time is I still don't think they have a decent striker, and I think that the loss of Philipp Lahm is huge for them. I think the back line is susceptible to movement, and I think that Spain, with those types of attacking, those attacking midfielders, if everybody's fit, this could be one last hurrah for Iniesta. But it sort of feels as if it's amongst that two. I don't think the French are good enough. Italy, I mean, I've been back in Italy at every tournament for I don't know how long. We will see in the summer. Now,
I'd just like to say, I mean, just looking, it's a great effort by the home nations. It's Wales, Northern Ireland, Republic of Ireland, and England all qualifying for the European Championships, and we all know that Scotland won't be winning it this time around because again they failed to qualify.
Well, the great news is that Drew and myself will have at least three teams to support once the England group is drawn. Now, just staying on the
15 teams to support.
Staying with matters with a French twist. Arsene Wenger has been reiterating his assertion that doping is a serious problem in football. I think he was a bit bent out of shape because the game they lost against Zagreb, there was a player that failed a drugs test here. I mean, guys, do we think there's this big problem in football, or?
Well, personally, Wenger's actually brought in 2004, he did the same thing about the blood doping, and he explained that some of the teams that had actually bought players from actually were involved in blood doping. And then again, there was a study done in 2011 by WDA that basically found that there was 117 FIFA athletes had actually broken blood doping regulations. And then only last year, only this year, there was another study done where 8% of European footballers had actually failed steroid tests. 68 players have actually failed the steroid test. So obviously, it shows that there is testing getting done. And when you've got approximately 10% of the players involved in steroids and potentially blood doping.
I mean, is this in the Premier Leagues of every country, or is this in the lower leagues of football leagues?
This is
out of interest because
this the FIFA players type of the way they.
Well, I guess the guys are subject to routine testing.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, there has to be a correlation in sport, I would guess, between money and cheating.
Yes.
I mean, slightly different maybe in the 80s with the old Iron Curtain with East Germany and Russia. That was a national sort of pride thing. But I would guess the more money that's in a sport, I mean, there's a lot of people, for instance, are questioning why golfers are not tested, because I think since Tiger came along, there's an awful lot of golfers who've changed their physiques massively. There's also the issue possibly of beta blockers, which was, for instance, snooker had a problem with that in the 80s. And if you're standing over a putt and you've got something to reduce your heart rate, I'm not saying that, you know, golfers are all on drugs, but it just seems that the fact that football would be so exempt from it probably seems a little bit naive, possibly. Or?
In my opinion, I think Arsene Wenger has got a point. In football, we see everything passing under the radar. Not much attention is being paid on doping and such problems. And it's not just the money that players get paid. It's about the money that fans are spending to go and watch those guys. There's so many people betting on these games and everything. There's a lot of money riding on these games. So I wouldn't be surprised if tomorrow there's a stringent regime for drug testing and doping.
I would be a little bit suspicious of all those Pakistani runouts the other day against England as well. But I mean, just, jokes aside though, guys, I mean, we do think this is something that FIFA needs to address. I mean, they've got a lot of things to address at the moment. But
I mean, how many big cases have we seen in the press the last, say, 10, 15 years in the Premier League? I mean, the biggest one I remember is Rio Ferdinand, who didn't fail a test but failed to turn up for a test.
Well, the circumstances behind that are still very, very muddled and unclear.
Very shady.
Yeah. There's a lot that fail, obviously, when they take the recreational, like Maradona. He liked his recreational.
And like Steve's favourite, Adrian Mutu.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I read the article that was actually explaining about what happened in 2011. Almeida, who was playing with Parma at the time, when he did his confession or statement to WDA, he actually said that Parma, before and during the game, were actually doing these IV drips that they were explaining were just full of vitamins and a cocktail of vitamins, for want of a better word, and he would go out feeling like he could jump into the ceiling.
Well, the WDA, I think, has made an assertion that it's your responsibility what goes into your body. You know, a doctor telling you this is just this is not sufficient. But I remember going back with Juventus, I think at the time of Viali and Ravinelli and things. I mean, there was, I think it was creatine they were using and things. I mean, it's, you know, it's slightly sort of...
Bit more legal in the scheme of things. You
okay,
know?
Well,
that was used by a lot of Premier League players as well. I remember there's a few health issues for a number of players.
Especially if you take too much.
Yeah.
Well, I think as well, you know, one of the reasons that was, you know, explained for the Brazilian Ronaldo, you know, for basically what happened to him was that he was actually a very, very sort of lean and not lanky, but a very sort of lean player at 16, 17, went to PSV Eindhoven, put on a bunch of muscle, and then his ligaments and tendons just simply couldn't cope.
Well,
so
if you look at, remember, I mean, Messi was very, very small.
Well, he had a growth deficiency.
Now, if you start getting growth hormone in any form of athletics, you should be banned because that's under the WDA. So now all of a sudden you have Messi, who will have this growth accelerated hormone within his body. And all of a sudden, if he goes for testing, it's going to show these spikes.
Okay. That reminds me of the fact that a lot of Brazilians who come to English Premier League. They're very lean, they're very slight, and people keep talking about them being very slight for English Premier League. I'm sure they must be taking something to get up.
I mean, you look at Bale and Ronaldo, they're both people that suddenly put on a lot of muscle. Anyway, we don't want to be speculating about individuals. Now, from performance enhancement to the other end of the spectrum, and Louis van Gaal, who this morning I see in the papers has said that he does nothing at United. He has teams of doctors and statisticians and technical advisors.
I'd just like to say, with the football they're playing, it seems he does do nothing at Man United.
Well, I would certainly say that Ryan Giggs does nothing. I mean, Ryan Giggs seems to just... He's like this sort of like little puppet that just sits next to Van Gaal, and he's forgotten to use the hand. I mean, I think the point he's making is that the modern manager, a lot of his duties have been stripped away, and he is really just this first team coach, and there's just this army of people. I mean, you know, Drew, are the days of the old fashioned manager, I guess that's gone now?
Long gone. I mean, they're trying to get more into the European style, which has a manager, it has a club director, football director, deal with the transfers, and you're just eventually there to coach. Van Gaal, the way the English Premiership is probably somewhere between a first team coach and a club director which deals with the transfers.
Okay, well, interesting from Van Gaal. Now, obviously, Van Gaal had two spells at Barcelona, and it's El Clasico weekend. They'll be up against Cristiano Ronaldo this weekend. Now, there's been a lot of talk in the papers, manufactured or otherwise, about Ronaldo possibly being on the move. I mean, with the wages he's on and the age that he's at, and presumably the transfer fee that Madrid would demand, I mean, is he actually transferable, Jeremy, or?
Probably in Europe, there's three clubs, Man City, Man United, PSG. I mean, he wouldn't go to Barcelona, that's for sure.
Well, the Rangers, I think
they could
come
after
them.
Well, if they do,
EBTs,
yeah, he might be able to.
Allegedly.
It depends what he wants to do. If he wants to play good football, it will be one of these three clubs. If he wants to go for the money, he can go to the Middle East. Probably going to go to the States.
Well, I mean, it's quite interesting, Parth. I don't know what you think, but for instance, in Formula One, one of the things that they've talked about with Lewis Hamilton is the fact that doing it with multiple teams. Now, Ronaldo has obviously, he's won the Champions League with Manchester United, won the Champions League with Real Madrid, two of the biggest clubs in Europe. Now, for instance, if you take PSG, obviously if you're going there, there's a huge financial incentive. But for Ronaldo, if there's one last challenge, would taking, you know, a team in Ligue 1 and winning the Champions League, is that the kind of challenge that he would need to maybe, you know, the final icing on the cake for him?
Personally, I don't think so, because Ronaldo is a guy who thrives on fans, who wants to be really popular, who wants to be treated like God. I don't think he'll be treated like God if he goes to PSG. How many fans are there around the world for PSG? Which is not the case with United or Real Madrid, Barcelona. No, I'm talking about teams Ronaldo has played for. So probably Real Madrid, he gets that kick, but probably not at PSG, I don't think so.
Well, another point with going to PSG, I mean, with Ibrahimovic being the number one and the superstar, how would that work?
Yeah, but you know, Zlatan is 34 going on 35.
I think he'll be gone next season. Yeah.
Can I just, interject with something that happened with David Beckham? David Beckham came to PSG towards the latter part of his career, and because of the way the tax laws were in Paris and all that you get taxed on all your global taxes, therefore the money that PSG would actually have to actually pay to incentivize Ronaldo to go could be astronomical, unless he donates it all to charity.
I'm very muddled on FFP, what actually exists. I mean, you know, effectively their owners have a bottomless pit, but I don't quite understand whether there is FFP or not, or I'm very sort of fuzzy on the whole thing. But anyway, I'm sure it's probably just a precursor to another blockbuster deal at Madrid. But obviously, this weekend, I mean, Messi is back in training. Luis Suarez is saying that Messi's looking very sharp. I don't suppose we would expect anything else. I mean, Rafa Benitez, they had the loss to Sevilla. the football's been criticised. I don't think there's any great surprise there. I mean, is he already under pressure if Barcelona go there and win, Parth?
Well, I don't understand why he's under pressure already. He has just lost one game since he has taken over as real boss. And people are already talking about dressing room fights, players not being happy about him, playing style not being good. However, I would agree with one point that this guy is a really good coach, but probably not as good as a man manager. He had the same problems at Liverpool, and I suspect he had the same problems with Chelsea as well. In that one season, he won Europa League for them. Yeah.
It was funny, actually. I think with Benitez, in fairness to him, I've never been really his greatest fan, but I think he did change a lot of opinions in that 6 months at Chelsea. I think he earned respect, even if he didn't earn a lot of love.
It did very well at Chelsea with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
We bring the UEFA League, which is something they've never done. I mean, there's not many football clubs, although I hate to say it, that have won the European Cup, the Champions League.
There's only one to win the current Champions League and the Europa League.
Yes. And who's that, if you don't mind me asking?
Chelsea, yes.
Chelsea. I mean, Benitez's record against Barcelona, against all the clubs he's been with or managed, he's faced them 12 times. He's won 4, drew 1, lost 7. And that's, you know, including teams managing Valencia and Liverpool.
Although I think a lot of managers would have... I mean, Mourinho has, you know, a pretty terrible record against Barcelona, I think.
Yeah.
But he's got Bale back in, he's got Benzema back in, Rodriguez will play again. So he's got a full squad to pick from now against Barcelona. So he should, you know, he needs a result because if they draw
Is Benzema going to need special boots for that ankle thing or?
One of the common denominators of the losses that Real have is the same team that beat Real beat Barcelona and Seville. Yet Seville is sitting mid-table.
Yes.
And it just goes to show you, you know, that, I mean, if Seville had actually, they're one of, I mean, how many teams could say they actually beat the top two at the end of the season, you know?
Yeah. But with that, if Real Madrid lose and Atletico win, that puts Atletico second and Real Madrid third, and that's going to be pressure on Benitez for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it promises to be certainly an interesting game. It's usually a fixture that does live up to its billing. Now, not quite on the same scale, Blackburn Rovers have hired Paul Lambert. Drew, is this a marriage made in heaven, or is this just, you know...
I think this is what I would call Mick McCarthy syndrome. Basically, you bring in a manager that's proven from taking teams in lower divisions and bringing them up to the Premiership.
Wait, people forget.
Norwich.
I mean, sorry. People remember Lambert at Villa, but I mean, he did a cracking job at Norwich, and they played some very, very good football.
I mean, obviously, if you look at Wikipedia, you can see his stats. But I mean, he's basically, his loss rate was only something like 25%. So 75%, 50 of he won. And he did phenomenally, won the old Division 1, and then he won the, he came runner-up in the Championship to come up. So, for me, he's a bit like McCarthy. You look at McCarthy's record for taking the Sunderlands and that all the way up, bringing them into the Premiership, and then as soon as they hit the Premiership, it just didn't transcend.
Parth, trying to take some local knowledge into account, or as local as it can be when Pune's 1,000 kilometres from Mumbai, but, I mean, are Venky's really getting their head around what they've got here, or is this just them trying to sort of limp through and damage limitation, or are they serious about getting back into the top flight? Or?
Well, personally, I would think that it's just damage limitation, but I think that's the best choice they've got out there as well. Looking at Paul Lambert, people used to talk about Harry Redknapp in the same fashion, that he's probably the survival expert of bringing up teams and all. Paul Lambert has done it twice in consecutive years for Norwich. And when he went on to...
Well, the remit this year is probably just to keep Blackburn in the Championship
first.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, that's what I would think. Because Venky's, I don't think they've got much football expertise. Had they had it, they would not have been relegated 3 years ago. I mean, and they've just mismanaged the club really badly. That's what I think.
Well, maybe they'll bring Shebi Singh back to the rescue. But anyway, that's going to bring us to the end of part one, and we'll be back with part two. Okay, so here we are back with the One Shot Football podcast. Well, sorry, I should say the Beyond the 90 podcast, powered by One Shot Football. Let me get my game face on. Sorry. Now, in part two, we as always, we have a round table discussion. Now, one thing that has agitated Mr. O'Donnell this week is international call-ups for players who are, you know, young and inexperienced. I think Jesse Lingard was the latest this week. There was a couple of probably ill-deserving Spurs players as well. Jeremy, we'll get to that later.
No comment just yet.
So, you know, what we want to talk about is, are, you know, is the cap being devalued? I mean, Drew, what is it that's really frustrating you here?
Personally, I think there's two functions with the cap being devalued. It's one, players get it too young, too early, without actually physically having proven themselves at during the competition, like under 21, under 19, even club level, correct? And then you have the older players who maybe come into fruition, like a James Vardy, etc., that potentially will take a little bit longer to prove themselves. If James Vardy had been a 19, 20-year-old banging in goals, he'd probably got a call-up halfway through his...
Yeah. Let me just make a quick point there, though. I would argue that the England team, if it played in the Premiership, would be mid-table. And if you go to the World Cup or the European Championships, half the teams you come up against are not going to be as good as the top level in Europe.
Well, I agree, but I mean, if you look at the heyday of British football, which was late 60s into the 70s and early 80s, you know, collectively the big teams in England and Scotland, I'll throw that in, we did win a couple, or a few if you include Aberdeen, is that they were made up of homegrown players, and by homegrowns it was usually Welsh, English, Scottish players, but we didn't actually, apart from the England Premier, the 66 and the 70 with England, we didn't actually sort of like jump out at the world table when it came to national teams. And the problem that I just see in today is that young guys today they get a cap and then they fall away. Andros Townsend is one. He came to fruition, became a cap, and I could name 20 because I have links there all. But at the end of the day, has Jesse Lingard actually earned a cap after 7 games with Man U and 1 goal as a winger when there are multiple team players out there?
Sure, but I would argue that it's actually harder to get into the Manchester United team than into the England team.
Not right now, it's not. No, I mean, personally, I don't think so. I don't think they're playing attractive football. They got rid of the Belgian Januzaj.
But I mean, you know, you look at their... you've got Rooney, who's the England captain, Martial, Mata. I mean, these are all guys who walk into the England team. So if you can get into that team ahead of... I mean, Memphis Depay, he would definitely be in the England squad.
Oh, yes.
So Lingard's getting picked ahead of him.
But he's not actually setting Heather on fire. He's laid on a goal, he scored a goal. I mean, he's not like when you look, you used to get excited watching a Man U game or watching exciting wingers. He's not an exciting winger that you go, wow, he beats 6 players, puts a cross in. I mean, even Hart, and I'll go back to a Liverpool guy, even Harry Kewell, he used to give a little bit of excitement to the game. But Lingard, I've got to take a step back and think, what's he actually physically done that proves that allows him to get a cap?
I mean, Jeremy, there were a few. Well, Spurs had a decent contingent during the week for England. I mean, do you think? I mean, you know, like Dele Alli, Dyer. I mean, do you think these guys are, you know, worth their caps?
Well, I think. From an England point of view, you've got a couple of youngsters playing very well for Spurs in a top half team and limited experience at the highest level. But they've proved themselves already, and you know, if you want to have a good national squad, you need a core of players, probably from the same team that play week in, week out, that can then play week in, week, well, month in, month out for your national team, and you build your squad and your team around that. And I think this is why, with the European Championships coming up next year, I mean, looking at the England squad, it's not the best squad I've ever put out. But if you're building a base around...
It's also players, not the worst, but...
You know, I just think it's you've got to build around this. Lingard, I don't really know much about him, to be honest with you, but, I mean, from Spurs...
I mean, in fairness to Lindegaard, I think he would have played a lot more last season. He would have... I think that he would have probably played a lot more for Manchester United last year had he not got injured, in fairness to him. So that put him a year back. But, I mean, I thought the most ludicrous of all time was Theo Walcott for the 2006 World Cup. I mean...
2006,
wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, you know, he was, you know, barely 17. I think there was a girls' magazine called out, and
yeah, he drinks together every week.
No, I'm talking about just 17. Nothing with where your mind's straying.
No, I'm not.
You know, I think that, you know, that was a kind of just that was just senseless, especially as he, you know, barely figured in 2010. There are, you know, obviously reasons for sometimes for capping a young player. For instance, Jack Grealish is a, you know, he's been subject of a tug of war with the Republic and in England. And Bojan Krcic is another one. You know, he was capped by Spain very, very young. Admittedly, broken into the Barcelona team, but that was, I think, to keep, I think, Croatia, keep their mitts off him.
England tried the same thing with Januzaj.
Yeah, well, I think there was a whole host because he could do it. I mean, I think his initial, he's Albanian, I think, was his. That was actually who he wanted to play for.
Three or four.
Jeremy, you're going to tell us about Bojan Krcic.
No, I was reading about him, and you know, his career was looking so good when he played for Barcelona. And then he went to AS Roma for €12 million was sign-on fee.
Fortunately, he'd started to dip a bit by then. I don't know whether coming along at the same age and time as Messi.
Yeah.
You know, kind of maybe
similar stature.
He scored 7 goals in 37 appearances for AS Roma, and they had an option to take him on for an additional €28 million, which they declined. So Barcelona bought him back for 13, and they lent him out immediately to Ajax, who he won the league with.
He's a real Ajax type of player, I think.
They sold him to Stoke City for €1.8 million.
What a deal!
Like a bargain, yeah. And he's what, 24?
And in today's market, when you see some of the, I mean, Sterling going for €40 million. He's not 35 times better than Bojan.
But I mean, just getting back to the, you know, to the international issue. I mean, are we getting to the stage now where international football is effectively not second rate, but it's secondary in terms of consideration? I mean, we all love the European Championships, the World Cup or whatever, because it gives us a chance to just have, you know, a month of football and games everywhere. But the actual quality, I mean, if I look at the last World Cup, you know, there isn't a team. I mean, even Germany, the fact that Germany don't have won the World Cup without a recognised striker.
Well, you can't even say that with Müller. I mean, although people would say he's more of an attacking midfielder than a striker, he has got a very good strike record.
But what I'm saying is that there are club sides that could go into these tournaments
and win them, for sure. Easily.
Yeah, very true. But that's because they play weekend.
And also with international football as well at the moment, if you look at the traditional powerhouses of world football, it's bizarre at the moment. Brazil are a shadow of the former selves. Argentina are terrible, despite all the players. Holland are dreadful. France are dreadful. Italy are dreadful. England are dreadful.
Dreadful.
I mean, Portugal are a way down where they are. The only two guys you would say who are really probably doing well are punching above their weight, probably Germany, Uruguay, powerhouses. Germany, Uruguay, and Belgium.
Yeah.
Other than that, I'm really struggling to see who's doing well. It's just symptomatic of.
I mean, Spain are always going to be until all of a sudden people start catching up with their style of play and knowing how.
Well, I think that happened. That did happen. But again, they've evolved. The same as Barcelona. Barcelona play far more direct now. But obviously, it does help that they can have Neymar, Messi, and Suarez. None of whom are Spanish.
But you have so many of your players, your national team players, playing in different leagues around the world, and every league is a different style of football. So getting them back for a few days to play together again,
but when
it's very difficult to get them to gel.
But when we come down to it, I mean, you know, Jeremy, I mean, you're the only Englishman here, thank God. Do you really care how many times a player has played for their team before they go out? Do you think it devalues the whole thing, or do you just want to see the best players?
I think the national team's been devalued over the last 20 years due to the fact is that you go back 20 years, playing for England was you got a chance to play against the best players in the world. But week in, week out now, you're playing against the best players in the world.
But also, is it devalued because England are just not very good? And if England were good, these players wouldn't be getting these opportunities. I mean, Lindegaard's getting a chance because there's not really anybody else.
The problem, I mean, just going back a bit there, with England, we hung on to the old, the Beckham generation of players for far too long without bringing any new players through. So we probably skipped a generation of players to play for England. And now these guys are too old, or still not good enough. And so we're bringing in the youngsters to replace these older guys. And I think the experience we have isn't there.
There's two things that I always look at. When Germany had a very bad World Cup, I think it was 2006, they played pretty much with an under
20. Well, 98 and 2002.
And then they basically played an under 23 team for 2006, got to the quarters of six.
Well, 2006 was their own World Cup, so obviously they were
building. And they played some very good football.
They
played
semis, they got knocked out.
Yeah,
Italy.
They got knocked out, but their average age was very, very low, and then all of a sudden it gave them a platform to build on. So if you're going to have a youth policy, have it throughout. Don't just bring in sporadic people with very old people. Just basically say, I'm going to build a team that is going to be...
I think that's very fair. I mean, you look at probably the two greatest international teams of the last 15 years, I would say, were probably the French team around the turn of the century, which all grew together, and then obviously the Spanish team. I mean, Brazil 2002 was relying on Ronaldo and Ronaldinho. Yeah. But that Spanish team, they all grew as a unit, they all played in the same way, they understood the whole thing.
Yeah, but with the French team, I mean, you had like four or five of the national team playing for Arsenal week in, week out as well, which also gave them a lot of stability and consistency.
But if you look at what happened with that team, Henri, there was a read what Gordon Strachan said about youth policy, and he said Gerard Houllier, when he was in charge of the French policies, etc., he basically brought in that you could not go out and buy someone over 23 mid-season. So when Monaco had a collapse, an injury crisis, they had to play the Henri's at 16 to play in the Monaco team. And then a few years later, he's winning the World Cup. So a policy, if it changes, you're in a position, stick to it.
The thing with that is that, there are clubs in England who are putting these policies in place, such as Newcastle and Aston Villa. The problem is that they're buying nearly all French, young players.
I mean, one of the things that I was trying to raise is there was a guy, and you'll be able to elaborate further, Ryan Mason for Tottenham, came in, had a reasonably good season last year, you admit, 22-23, gets called up for Lithuania and Italy. Doesn't play in the Lithuania game, gets 20 odd minutes against Italy due to an injury, and hasn't really been seen since.
And what happened? Still injured.
Yeah, okay. But what I'm actually explaining is there are a number of players, he wasn't injured from 20th of May or whatever it was last year.
That's because it's the end of the season.
The problem being is he's not really. The players haven't really developed further.
Oh, I agree. Right?
The Andros Townsend was one. Mason was another. Could Mason today get into the England team? Would you say he's good enough?
Townsend I'd actually stick up for, because I don't think he's done much wrong. I think he's not getting picked at Spurs, which is not his fault. I don't think he's done much wrong at Spurs.
He played well for England as well.
Yeah, exactly.
I think he's done well for. He's a player I actually quite like.
But has his attitude changed?
But the problem with guys, I just think with someone like Mason, I watch him. Yeah, okay, he's a decent player, but he's not. He's just not top level. He just really, really isn't. And that's the problem, is that I still think you're going to have... If I look at this England squad now, you've got, I would say, Sturridge and Sterling, who are both excellent players.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say anybody is world class.
Yeah.
Luke Shaw, I think, potentially is very, very good. John Stones is probably the guy who will be world class. Joe Hart is a very good keeper. Apart from that, you're kind of filling in the gaps and trying to get players to do a job, but there's no one who's really got a place nailed down. You think, that guy is
Sandra.
It's not like Gary Neville, Ashley Cole, Steven Gerrard. These guys are going to have the place for the next 8 to 10 years.
And that was the point I was trying to bring up. At the end of the day, is when you have football players that are not going to get in the 13 or 15 players that you would actually put on your team sheet, why just bring them in just to see what they can do? Until you go to them and say, I want to pick you, but you got to do a little bit more. You got to show me a little bit more. And that would maybe encourage them to play better for Tottenham, play better for Man U, play better for Liverpool,
Yeah, but I don't think that, I mean, the attraction of playing for the national team isn't what it was 20 years ago, as I just said. And also, I think for a younger player now, you look at what's going on at FIFA, you've got a bunch of like old guys involved in scandal, corruption, and who knows what else.
I don't know if it's so much that, but you know, for instance, if you're an England player, you know, you're the most, one of the most pampered guys out there with your Premier League club, the whole thing. All of a sudden, you start going to, you know, some places, you know, across the, you know, the globe, which you find less than appealing. And you know, you have to do that. It's a very mundane sort of, you know, existence, if you like, in that respect. And then, you know, at the end of it, you've got a tournament where you've got absolutely no chance. And you know, footballers all talk about they believe they can win every game that they play in, and it's true to some extent. But you really can't tell me that there's a single England player who's going to the European Championships this summer thinking that they're going to win it.
Well, I would say this: what's going to happen to Jesse Lingard, right? His agent is going to go first thing into Man U at the beginning of the season and say he's now been called up for England, he's an internationalist, you should be paying him what international.
Well, most of these guys do have a clause, I think, or certainly a lot of them, that if they, once they become an international player, they get. And that is one thing where I think people, well, where players should actually respect the fact that they're an international, because there is a prestige that comes with it. You know, people do talk about, every time you listen to a player, you listen to TalkSport, you listen to Stan Collymore, Danny Murphy, what's your proudest moment in football? First time I walked out at Wembley. So that's the thing. The thing is devalued, yet they wheel it out. After their careers are over, they wheel it out. England, when they're introduced, you know, it doesn't say Danny Murphy, Fulham legend. It says Danny Murphy, England international. And then, they, you know, they list the clubs in terms of order. Liverpool would be first.
But, I mean, as you say, a lot of those players weren't getting anywhere near what these teenagers were getting. And that's what, for me, is the crux.
But those are market forces.
But that's a different generation of players. Yeah. They weren't playing against the players, you know, the world-class players that they're playing against now. You play Man City, you're playing 11 world-class players. You play against, say, Denmark, you're playing against two world-class players.
Playing against England, you're playing against no world-class players. Yeah. Anyway, I think we sort of sound like old, sort of bitter and twisted individuals. So it's a debate that will rumble on, but that will take us to the end of part two, and we'll be back with part three. So here we are back with part three of the Beyond the 90 podcast, powered by One Shot Football. I'm your host, Steve McBain. So in part three, we're going to just preview some of the weekend's big games. Kicking off with the early fixture at Watford, which is basically Watford hosting Manchester United, two of the meanest defences in the league. Parth.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a game of who concedes more, I would say. I think United should still nick it. Watford, I don't think they can beat this United team, even though United is just rubbish.
Martial went off on crutches at Wembley. You're tipping United to win this?
Yeah, I think it's going to be probably 1-0 or 2-1 for United.
Okay, low scoring away win. Drew, what are you thinking here?
Yeah, I think exactly the same. I think Manu will sneak it 1-0, probably. If they get a 2-0, it'll be a miracle. There's just no scoring. They have a lot of possession, a lot of sort of good play, but they just don't seem to be direct enough to bang the goals in. And that's unfortunate for them at the moment. But a decent enough team.
I think as well, they got a cracking goalkeeper.
Yeah. I mean, he's just phenomenal.
I actually think that's the best piece of business done this summer. Keeping him and getting him to sign that new contract. Yeah.
I think from a Man U sort of perspective, I'm a much more prefer Jones and Smallman. Maybe it's a British style or English style, whatever you want to call it, even as a Scotsman. But I'm not a big fan of Blind playing there, and he seems to prefer Blind to Rojas. And whereas I would prefer...
Well, Hodgson started with... Did he not start with Jones and Smalling, I think?
No, he started with...
Sorry, he went with Stones and Cahill against France, but...
The first game in that... Yeah. That's what I...
And then they lost 2-0.
I like Smalling, I like Jones, and I think if they can if they can maintain that partnership, they could go on as well as.
Well, I think you know if you look at Jones and Smalling, it's a bit of the sort of, I mean, not in the same class, but you know, a bit of the sort of the Ferdinand Vidic. You know, you've got the. A big strong guy and a real sort of. I have to admit, I may need to revise my opinion on Michael Smalling as Van Gaal refers to him soon, but I'm not quite at that stage yet. Now, anyway, Jeremy, what are you going for here?
I can't see Watford beating Man United. I mean, although they're pretty well good defensively, they've only scored 11 goals this season. Man U have not conceded in their last five games. This is an away win for me, 1-0.
I think Man United, too much quality, and I think also too much ability to manage a game properly. This is the kind of game that they should win. I'll go for 1-0 Manchester United as well. Now, the mighty Blues, the home of football, Stamford Bridge. Chelsea will be up against Norwich.
In a relegation battle.
Well, it is, a relegation 6-pointer if you look at the table. I mean, Jeremy, was Jose doomed, or will the break have done them some good, or what's happening here?
As I said a couple of weeks ago on the pod, I think Mourinho's gone. If he loses,
well, he's still there. If you keep saying it every week, at some point you'll be. I mean, because he will retire probably when he gets to 70. Anyway, you'll eventually be right. But
very good point, Steve. Sooner rather than later, though. Chelsea 16th, Norwich 15th. So relegation battle, as I said. I mean, Norwich haven't beaten Chelsea in 11 games. Norwich not
That's
on good
not
form.
Stopped a lot of teams
no,
this season.
No, Norwich are on a good form. Chelsea are on terrible form. But I'd like to say, last time I thought Chelsea would win, they lost against Stoke, wasn't it?
And West Ham.
This could be a really boring 0-0 draw. That's what I think.
Personally, I think Chelsea is going to nick this one, even though it's not going to be a very good Chelsea team playing against Norwich. But I think Chelsea will win it 1-0, probably.
Parth, I'd like to say it is a very good Chelsea team. It has some of the best players in the world play for Chelsea. They're just not playing very well.
I don't rate them that high.
You got Chelsea win.
Draw, Drew? I'm unfortunately going to go with a Chelsea win. But I do like to chuckle at the fact that if Bournemouth win and Chelsea lose by enough,
Bournemouth.
How'd you say it? Bournemouth. As my mother would say, if Bournemouth win and Chelsea get gumped, Chelsea could actually fall into the relegation zone, which is something that you've actually brought up, Jeremy.
That is awesome.
Well, yeah. Borussia Dortmund were bottom at Christmas last year. I'm gonna go for some reverse sort of yin yang thing here. I'm gonna go for a Norwich win. So
confidence in Mourinho.
By the way, how did Mourinho do in this week's press conference? Usual grumpy stuff.
It's today, isn't it? It's Friday. Friday.
The Mourinho.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. So Newcastle Leicester. I mean, Newcastle started to sort of flicker to life. Mitrovic looks a bit of a beast up front, but I mean Leicester. Jamie Vardy unfortunately is an injury doubt, but hoping he can keep up his good work. I mean, this could actually be quite a decent game, could it, Drew?
I reckon it can. I'm a big fan of Leicester and James Vardy, as you know. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that if Leicester win, I think they're one of the first games. So I mean, if they actually win and the results go their way, they could actually be up top of the league.
I mean, they're a good team. They're a good team. Parth, what are you thinking here?
I think Leicester winning here. Even though, as you say, Jamie Vardy might not be there, but Riyad Mahrez is there. And he's scoring some goals and providing some
assists. Good player, isn't he? He's a good player, Mahrez.
I think Leicester will definitely win this one.
Jeremy?
Okay, Leicester beat Newcastle once in their last 8 meetings, which doesn't mean much with Newcastle's form at the moment. But the Magpies have kept two clean sheets in the last 2 games. I think it depends on Vardy. If Vardy plays, I go for Leicester. If he doesn't, then it's a draw.
Well, you've got to pick one.
Which one?
I just said. If Vardy plays, pick one. Leicester win.
Well, then you don't get a prediction.
Yeah. I'd say you lose your point.
Leicester win.
Well, I'm hoping to spread the doom and gloom, so I'm going with Newcastle. And Jamie Vardy draws a blank. Now, Southampton Stoke. I mean, it's been... I'm actually quite impressed with Southampton because the previous summer they sold all their apparently the best players and then had a wonderful season. Then they did the same again this summer and then everyone was expecting them to do the same thing. They've had a dip, but they're really coming out the other side. Some of the players they brought in now seem to be adjusting to life in the Premiership. They've got some really good players up front. Graziano Pelli linked with Juventus just this week, although I think he was linking himself with them. Parth, I mean, as Southampton really consolidating into a good team?
I think Southampton, it's commendable to them what they did after Liverpool snatched so many players from them.
Well, I think they just sold you all their worst players.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Actually, I wouldn't disagree with what you're saying. Apart from Klein, yeah, exactly. But I think they're a good team. They have a decent manager there.
Seems like as well he's found his, not, I mean, sorry, I don't want to say his spiritual home, but he does seem to have finally, Koeman is typically someone who's faded as a manager, but he does actually seem to like being at Southampton.
Yeah, absolutely. He feels at home there. And I think the team is well suited for him as well, his style of play. He feels like he's got
some character and identity to it, I always think.
Yeah, I think so, but I don't see Southampton finishing in top six again this year. Somehow they don't have that charisma about them.
Step too far.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. What are you thinking results-wise here?
I think it's going to be a draw.
A draw. Okay, now Drew, I mean Stoke, I mean, they've got some great players. We spoke about Bojan, Shaqiri was...
Adam, Talley, just throw that one at him.
The only player whose backside can be in both penalty boxes at the same time.
And he's got a goal from the opposition half.
Yes, but did you see the disparaging? Yeah. Did you see the disparaging remarks Jamie Carragher made about
Jamie Carragher. Yeah.
Wasn't happy about it. But anyway, I mean Stoke. I mean they've been trying to start improving a little bit and coming off. I mean,
I like Mark Hughes. I think he's a good manager. I think he was a great footballer. I just think that Stoke are always going to be mid-table for whatever reason, whether it's investment, whether it's policy, whether
mentality, it's possibly
mentality, etc. And they've only won one in their last five games. They had a great run in the middle, lost a few, and then they won back on. Hopefully, it will maintain. But I can't see it. I think Southampton are just too strong.
Southampton got too much. Okay, so you're going with Parth. You said draw, sorry.
Southampton.
Home win. Jeremy?
I agree with you guys. I think Southampton will win. I mean, Stoke are 12th, but I mean, Drew said, you know, their last few games of form, but they've only lost once in all their last 9 games, Stoke. That's a pretty decent record to have, but to still be only 12th, you know, it's not good enough, I suppose.
Well, I think the thing is that they've signed...
It's 1 in 12.
They've signed so many attacking players, but you know, the football's not really flowing yet. I mean, I don't know whether that's something that will come. You know, the fact is, there's a lot of players been added. It is going to take time to gel. There's some different cultures and things. I think a big thing for Stoke is having Ryan Shawcross back. I think that's immense. He handled Diego Costa very, very well, even if there were some issues over deodorant. But
and that's a guy that is underrated. You know, they always talked about John Terry coming back in. And Ryan Shawcross actually only got one cap for the 20-odd minutes. Yet there are so many average sort of centre.
Wasn't Shawcross, was he Manchester United youth as well?
Yeah.
I think he was.
And you just see like players like that. Kevin Nolan was another one who played a lot, played very good football.
Bolton,
Newcastle, did very well, 350 odd games, captains are all over the place.
Kevin Davis was the guy I was thinking off off air, by the way. So anyway, okay, Jeremy, prediction time?
Southampton.
Okay. Southampton, okay. I'm going to have to go with a home win here as well. I just think that Southampton are a good team, and Stoke, I'm still waiting to see the best of them. Now, the big fixture this weekend, I guess, is Manchester City hosting Liverpool. Now, I think for Jurgen Klopp, Parth, we'll come to you first. I mean, this is a particularly big game for him, given that, you know, lost last time out at... at Palace and have a Europa League game, you know, midweek again. Obviously, there's the Raheem Sterling factor as well. Parth, I mean, have the Reds got a chance in this one?
Well, I think we definitely have a chance in this.
I thought you might say that, Parth. Yeah. But
No. Is there any
reason for that, Parth?
Yeah, absolutely, because we have got a very good team. All right. Jokes aside, I think it's going to be a good game. I agree with Steve when you say that Jurgen Klopp, for him, it's a very important game. Not just because the loss against Crystal Palace, I don't think they're related at all, but I think this is the first big team he's going to face as a Liverpool manager. Chelsea, of course, was a big team, yeah. I don't know, but they're down and out right now. So there's going to be a big test for them, but I think Liverpool might...
Parth, one of the things I wanted to ask you was, I mean, Klopp is famed for this high energy, high press. I mean, Manchester City at the Etihad, that's a difficult team to press. I mean, do Liverpool run the risk of sort of, you know, basically exhausting themselves in the first hour? You would guess that City are going to have a lot of pressure. But do you think Klopp might adjust his tactics and sit a bit deeper? Or is he just going to, this is how we play, and he's going to go that way?
Well, I don't think Klopp is going to sit deeper at all. And not in this game, because City also likes to play out of their half. And which gives us a good chance of scoring goals, although our own defense is not that great. But I'm hoping that Aguero doesn't play. If Aguero is not playing, I think we have got a real chance.
Everyone that plays Manchester City is hoping Aguero doesn't play. But
I hope Sturridge is back as well.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think he probably sounds like he'll be fit enough for at least for the bench. So, power prediction time?
I think 2-1 to Liverpool.
I think you're dreaming.
Jeremy, what are your thoughts here?
Man City, easily. Liverpool got too many injuries. Although Man City had a bit of a shocker last week, being held by Villa, I just think they're too good for Liverpool. I don't think Liverpool are that good. I mean, you're a Liverpool supporter, Parth. You dream a lot, and I think you're dreaming.
Of course, we are all dreamers, man. If Villa can hold them, we can beat them.
Okay, so home win for you, Jeremy?
Yeah, I mean, the last six times that the Etihad, Liverpool have lost. So
really? Is that six times? Okay, Drew?
That's always never wrong.
Well, not wrong. There may be a couple of draws in there, but they never won in six games.
Okay, they haven't won in six. Okay. Yeah. Drew?
Long story short, it's going to be either a draw or a Man City win.
Or a Liverpool win. Thanks. Those are the three possible results.
There are three possible results. I'm going for a draw.
Or an abandonment. Floodlights might go.
I can have one. I'm going to say Man City is going to win. Because basically the form team very rarely lose at home, even over the piece for the last three, four, five seasons. And they are just, without doubt, one of the top teams in the league. Liverpool are still finding their feet under Klopp. Hopefully Sturridge will make a difference for the league, and Leicester will actually be top at the end of Saturday, because that will make me chuckle even more.
Yeah. Well, for me, I think City are just simply a better team than Liverpool. They're at home, 2-0 City. Okay, now...
The biggest game of the weekend.
The biggest... Is that
Palace and the Lake?
I would just like to inform our listeners that Jeremy lives in a 6-foot by 6-foot box. So it is the biggest game in that box. But anyway, Spurs West Ham. Jeremy, we'll start off with you because you're a Spurs fan. This would really frustrate me. One of the things I remember when I was going to Stamford Bridge a lot in the 90s, and Chelsea seemed to be perennially in the Cup Winners' Cup. Playing on a Sunday, always, you know, I like my day out on a Saturday at the football. Spurs have got so many Sunday fixtures because of the Europa League. Wouldn't this just be a good opportunity to give Spurs a 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday?
May well be, but on Spurs' record, we have a very, very good record playing on Sunday. It's better than our Saturday record. So I'm quite happy for us to be playing on Sundays.
God disagrees with you, by the way. You just heard the thunder in the background.
Okay, we've drawn 3-1-3 on a Sunday. We've lost one, drawn 3-1-1 on a Saturday. Our Sunday record is much better. Although our record against West Ham in the last six games is pretty lousy.
Payet's going to be a huge miss for West Ham, right?
He is. Yeah, he's the one of the biggest assists in the Premier League at the moment for goals. It's always difficult with West Ham. Form doesn't come into it. It's about passion. I was at the Tottenham West Ham game in February this year when Spurs were lucky to get a 2-2 draw.
First time at White Hart Lane ever, was it?
It's very difficult to get to White Hart Lane for the weekend when you're living in Singapore, Steve. All right.
Anyway, I'm just a little bit conscious of time. So, Jeremy, prediction?
3-1 Spurs.
3-1 Spurs. Drew?
2-0.
Two all.
No reason behind that.
I think it's actually, well, I think it should be an entertaining fixture. And Paz?
I think it's going to be a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, well done.
Well, I'm going to go for a West Ham win just to... Well, they've been excellent away from home, right? So, you know, Spurs, all the players playing for England.
And they're the giant killers. Those personal giants.
West Ham have actually lost once with
them. Okay. Now, anyway, we just have time to squeeze in our weekly quiz, which we always try and make, well, I try and make as topical as possible. So, El Clasico weekend.
Really studying on that.
2002, Luis Figo. What was thrown at him as he took a corner?
His mother.
Nope.
Did we get an option? Options?
You should remember, well, he
put 2002
He had just been transferred to Real Madrid, and this was his first game back at the new Camp.
Alexander, Real Madrid shirt or Barcelona shirt?
Nope. You don't know this, very famous moment. It was a pig's head.
Oh.
And, well, exactly. And in pounds sterling, what was his transfer fee from Barca to Real Madrid? World record at the time.
£20 million.
Yeah.
I think £50 million.
It was 30 million, so I would say 30 million.
37 million. Now, how many El Clasico goals has Lionel Messi scored?
11.
11 from Drew.
Probably 13.
13?
Yeah.
9.
21.
Wow.
I knew there was a 1 in there.
In how many games?
How many games?
2. In the last El Clasico, Barcelona came out as victors. They won 2-1, but who scored the winning goal?
Messi.
Wasn't a usual player.
It was the midfielder.
Rakitic. Yeah.
But you can't look the same as him. He's already said Rakitic.
Right.
And I'll give you a clue. It's wrong.
Rogatic.
Quickly.
Can't remember.
Luis Suarez. Now, goals per game ratio in La Liga. What is Ronaldo's? How many goals does he score per game?
Oh, this is his whole career or this season?
No, La Liga. Whole career.
Oh, okay, La Liga.
Quickly. Run out of time.
1-2.
1-1.
That's for a ratio.
Oh.
One.
So you're saying 0.5?
Yeah, 0.5.
I think 1.
Okay, Jeremy, you are not even... You clearly haven't been watching it. 1.11. Staggering. And Messi?
Messi is slightly lower. I would say 0.9.
Yeah, less than 1.
You can't just keep agreeing with you.
No.
0.95.
Okay, Drew gets the points. 0.9. I think with Ronaldo, admittedly, he turned up ready-made. He'd already hit his peak. Messi, you know,
two seasons.
Just to give you an example, Emil Heskey, 585 Premiership games. What was his ratio?
0.5, I would say.
0.17, 101 goals.
Just
a stat. I mean, this is just tells you how good Alan Shearer was before the second injury. So this is Blackburn, and then also his first season at Newcastle. 175 games, 137 goals, 0.78. That's pretty special, I would say. Now, anyway, I think I asked this question a few weeks ago, but anyway, last person to be La Liga top scorer before Messi or Ronaldo. I think I asked this a couple of weeks ago.
I'm going to go with Torres.
Okay, you're going with Torres.
No idea.
Okay, so 08-09 season, Diego Forlan.
Yes.
32-33. Now, talking of top scorers in the league, who's Chelsea's top scorer this season? It's in all competitions.
Cahill.
John Terry.
Will.i.am.
Yes.
Yes.
The Black Eyed Peas. And how many has he scored?
Six. I think 3.
5.
Oh, I was close.
Diego Costa and Ramirez have got 3 each, 2 each in the league. Okay, who was last season's Premiership top scorer? Very quickly.
Kane.
Sergio Aguero on 26. Now, Michael Owen's the fastest player to score 100 Premier League goals, 23 years and 4 months. But what was the highest number of Premier League goals he ever scored in a season?
32.
That's a good guess. 29.
Yeah, 27, I think.
Very famous stat there, you guys have no idea. He never scored 20 a season. He scored 19 twice. No, one.
You should know that part.
Or 102, no, 203.
Oh, then
he finished with 150 goals. He played 5 times against Liverpool in the Premiership. How many goals did he score against them?
None.
Zero.
No.
Big fat zero. Now, anyway, that takes us to, I think the winner today is Drew
O'Connor. Yes! Well done! Scotland!
Now, anyway, that takes us to the end of today's pod. So, a big thank you to Mr. Parfash. Thank you, Parth.
Thank you,
Mr. Drew O'Donnell. Thank you, Drew.
Thank you very much.
And Mr. Jeremy Searle.
Cheers, guys.
Okay, so thank you for listening to the Beyond the 90 podcast, and we'll be back next week.